Last November, I got together with my friends Todd and Carrie Alexander, and they put on an incredible event. The first annual Grenache Fest was held in Walla Walla, Washington on November 3rd, 2023. It featured 12 Grenache wines from Washington State producers. After the seminar, which was moderated by yours truly, there was a concert featuring Stephen Malkmus from the 90s underground grunge band Pavement, M. Ward, and Mark Pickerel, who is returning this year as our musical director. It was hands down one of the best wine events I've ever attended. And it was such a success that we're doing it again this year. Save the date, November 8th, 2024. If you're a producer wanting to pour your wines, if you want to volunteer, or if you simply want to attend this year's event, go to GrenacheFest.com and sign up on our email list to be the first to know regarding all things about this year's event.
Hey, I'm MJ Taller, also known as a Black Wine Guy. I went from being a totally obsessed wine newbie to becoming the world's first ever African-American fine and rare wine auctioneer in less than 3 years. In this show, I'll be talking to the mavericks, the philosophers, the players, and the deep thinkers who inhabit the world of wine. They'll share their experiences on how they made it, but more importantly, how they failed and got back up again. So grab a glass and let's get to it. This is the Black Wine Guy Experience.
Hey everybody, what's up? It's your boy MJ. Welcome to the Black Wine Guy Experience. My guest today is the winemaker. I love that. That's how you describe yourself. Is the winemaker at Saxum Vineyards, Justin Smith.
We don't have a better word, you know?
Okay.
The winemaker. Vigneron just sounds so pretentious, you know? Like,
Justin, you are a vigneron.
I'm the vigneron. I grow the grapes and I make the wine.
Have you heard Christoph's? Yeah. I got to finish reading your intro. This is going to be a fun one, you guys, to tell. Justin runs Saxum Vineyards with his wife, Heather McCreesh. I need to work on my Scottish. I know a little
McCush.
Bit. McCush. Smith. They established Saxum in 2002. They're focused on producing Grenache, Syrah, and Mataro-based blends using grapes from nearby vineyards located in the Willow Creek district of Paso Robles.
Willow Creek.
The majority of the grapes come from his family's estate vineyard, an American Grand Cru vineyard, the James Berry Vineyard. It was planted by his parents, James Berry and Terry Smith, in the 1980s, and he focuses on farming sustainably and organically, keeping yields low, picking fruit at the peak of ripeness, and using a minimalist approach in the cellar. And Justin believes that this approach results in the texture, natural acidity, and ripe flavor of the fruit remaining in the bottle for decades to come. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to be here. So, guys, this is hallowed ground. I love this place. It's my second time visiting. This is like the flex. This is one of those places that has a gate, and it's gated. And it pulls up. It's like, no tasting facilities, not open to the public. Ha ha! So, you guys are getting, and we're actually filming inside here. I wish I'd take you around sometime when I get a TV show. Me and Justin will do a whole
thing. We're in the hookah lounge right now.
We're in the hookah lounge. This is the first ever podcast. There's a little background music because it's just too dope. He's got the vinyl going. Yo, man, so again, thanks so much. What wines are we?
What do we got in the glass now? What are we going to be drinking?
So I popped one of our whites and one of our reds. This is, we only do one white.
Yep.
James Berry white, Grenache Blanc, Roussan, Chenin Blanc, touch of Chardonnay. This is 2018, so a few years of age on it. We do it all in big 600 liter barrels. About half, two-thirds are new.
Mm-hmm.
Made more like in a traditional Burgundy style, pressed straight to barrel, dirty, ferments, stays on its lees, goes through malolactic, stays on the gross lees the whole time, gets bottled after about 20 months.
Okay.
Ages without any SO2, which is kind of unique. We do this kind of death and resurrection style, they call it, where you kind of let it get a little oxidized in barrel, it stabilizes, and then you add a little SO2 at bottling, brings it back to life, and at that point it's nice and stable, can age great. It's pretty much a Burgundy made by a dude in California who grows Rhone varieties.
Yeah, and then a little bit of Chenin blown in there.
Yeah, because Chenin, like, there was some old vineyards around here that were Chenin. Chenin was like the white of Paso Robles.
Yeah.
You know, there was Zin as our main red, and if there was white, it was usually Chenin.
Yeah.
It does really well. Gross. I mean, it's not from an area that you would think Paso is.
I've had Thatcher makes a Chenin, mm-hmm. old vine. Which is delicious.
Yeah.
And when I was coming over here with Jeremy J Man, you know, I was like, oh yeah, fucking as Tyrolli, right? I love Paso Zin. You know, Uberoth, insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of your proteges, Don Burns. It's one of my favorite wines is the fucking Westburg Red.
Yep. Four Hearts Vineyard.
Which mm-hmm. is right next to Uberoth.
Yep.
And then we'll get into it later, but and also then you made the Zin blend with Philippe.
Yep. Yeah,
which I called mm-hmm. a Zinfandel de Pop.
I like that.
I made that up. Uh-huh. I should have trademarked shit because people
like it.
People bite
it.
My shit, dude.
I've
I know.
Used
yeah,
it.
I'm,
used
I'm
it.
Thank you.
Thank
I'm,
you for
I'm
that.
Honored. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So yeah, Zin does great around here. So yeah, traditionally Paso Robles, all the old stuff was mainly Zin, little Carignan and some other red snuck in Alicante and whatnot. But yeah, Chenin was the white, and it brings structure. Chenin's got this tannin.
Yeah.
So we've had the Roussan here for a long time, planted that like mid-90s when Beaucastel, Talbot's Creek first brought it in, but we've been selling it off to other wineries. Mm-hmm. But when I decided I wanted to make a white, for me Roussan by itself a little too heavy, too like fat and waxy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I put in the Grenache Blanc for that brightness, it's got great acidity, and then the Chenin for some tannin structure.
Nice,
so
nice.
I figured those three would go good together.
I think I got a bottle of that. I drank mine. I don't have the luxury of holding wines like you have here, Justin. I get some shit. I'm like, no, Jeb. The drinking window is
right
two weeks. 2 weeks after it gets there in my house. You know, little time to sell. I'm not waiting until 2023.
Nice.
It's great. I mean, this is a fucking 6-year-old white wine.
Yeah, I think they taste good young.
Yeah,
yeah. They get cool when they get older.
Yeah.
Too. And, I mean, we only started making it in 17, so
right.
It's not like we have really super old stuff around. But yeah.
But yeah, no, it's not. I mean, it hasn't fallen off. It's really good. So I start at the beginning. Where are you from?
So before Paso.
Yep.
My folks grew up in a little town called Encinitas,
which is
San Diego area.
North County.
Yep. San Diego.
A little bit inland.
Yeah, no, it's on the beach.
It is on the beach.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm thinking it's right, yeah, it's north. Though.
Yeah. So, yeah, my parents both grew up there, beach town, my parents' parents and whatnot.
Okay, so yeah.
They've been there for a long time, many generations. My dad was a vet.
Okay.
He went to vet school. No.
Oh, veterinarian.
Veterinarian.
Got it.
So he went to, speaking of, we can circle back to Vietnam, but
okay.
he went to vet school, basically trying to stay out of Vietnam.
Okay.
As long as I stay in school, they're not going to draft me.
Right.
So they went to Davis and...
did they know each other? They're
high school.
They're high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah. So yeah,
they don't get
high
that
school.
Anymore, man.
So they moved to Davis together, and
yep.
they lived on this little farm in Davis while my dad got his vet degree. After that, they moved back to Encinitas, opened a vet practice, but
okay.
I think that kind of living on the farm life took a hold of them
yep.
at that point. And so they did the whole Encinitas vet thing for 10 years. By that point, this was...
Now, were you born?
So you were born
down in San Diego.
I was actually
County.
Born in my dad's senior year in Davis.
Okay.
And as soon as I was born, they moved back down home. So 10 years there, surf kid growing up at the beach, and my dad got kind of tired of being a vet.
Yep.
Talked about wanting to change a life, wanted to go back to the farm life, decided, he was in like a wine group with his friends and stuff, tasting wine and liking wine, and decided he wanted to be a grape grower.
Okay.
So they sold their house and sold the practice and bought a piece of land up here, this place right here. They looked all over. They're mainly, of course, looking at Napa.
Right.
And they had a friend, though, in Paso Robles. And so whenever they're going up to Napa to look at
they'd
stop here in Paso
wow.
for the night on the way up. And kind of fell in love with the area then. And they started looking in Paso and found this spot. Back then, not much around. We got Uberoth down there, and we got Bazinti, Durley over here, you know, the two old Zen vineyards, but that was about it for this area. And, you know, so my folks back then, this is, you know, 1981, wanted to put in Chardonnay. You know, that was kind
of... Yeah, no, that's a that's a great story because I'm at... so when you said that, because I'm at... I was at a Paso Robles. They were doing the road tour a couple years ago. And I'd become, like, social media friends with Josh Reynolds. Josh Reynolds started, rest in peace, had started following me and DM and whatever. And you know, I've had Mark on, I did IG Lives with Mark, but Mark would tell me, he's like, and I know Josh used to come and taste with the three of you guys. And 9 o'clock in the morning, he shows up with his computer and a bottle of chartreuse. Before he can taste wise, he brings the chartreuse up. Like, he was a beast. You gotta love that fucking guy.
No, I miss him.
But I'm at this Paso Robles tasting that Joel Peterson and Chris are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
Somebody pulled out a Jamesberry Chardonnay?
No, somebody just started talking. Like I forgot. Somebody said, why don't they do Chardonnay in Paso? And he's like, well, actually... Josh was like that guy. Like,
James Barry started.
Like, and he's like, they sold us a champagne Jutz. And I'm like, that's got to be fucking Josh Reynolds.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah, so exactly. So the Champagne House was rumored to be going in here. And so my folks were like, yeah, we want to sell to them, you know, so let's put in champagne varieties. You know, we're 10 miles off the ocean.
So you would think it could work.
You would think, yeah.
Pinot,
it was
Chardonnay.
Like, yeah, it was not out of the element that it could grow, you know, because, I mean, Dutz was looking here. You know?
Yeah.
So they thought it was, you know, soils are very Burgundian, you know, so there was potential. So, yeah, they put in Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc, which actually ended up not being Pinot Blanc, but at the time, Pinot Blanc Chardonnay, Champagne House is going to buy it. But, yeah. Dutz pulled out, and so they were sitting on 32 acres of Chardonnay and Paso Robles in 1983.
Right,
it wasn't an easy
Paso
sell.
Robles. This is basically unknown. By and by, like, no for Zinfandel here. It wasn't known by New York. Like,
no,
send me those Paso Robles.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, and a lot of the Zinfandel was crap too. So there we go. Chardonnay back then, my dad struck up a friendship and started working with the Fetzers. So Bobby Fetzer was expanding, blowing up their family operation, looking for Chardonnay all over. And him and my dad totally hit it off. And so they started buying all of our Chardonnay, and they hired my dad to be the guy that oversaw all the vineyards that they bought from down in Central Coast of California.
Oh, okay.
So they did... did awesome. Our Chardonnay finally got bought. But it was later 80s, John Alwyn approached us. And he's like, you know, I don't think this area is that great for Chardonnay. I've got these crazy varieties. We just got back from the Rhone, you know. He had Viognier and Mourvedre. And he had Syrah Roussan. And he's like, can we, you know, graft some stuff over here at your vineyard to see if it does well? And it took a while convincing him and my dad, going back and forth, and finally my dad was like, okay, can graft over some of the Pinot Blanc. So that's what started us down the Rhone Avenue. Nobody wanted Pinot Blanc. The Chardonnay was a hard sell. Pinot Blanc. Yeah. So, like, that's what started us off was John Alban.
Okay.
And then not long after that, Kenny Volk at Wild Horse.
Okay.
We had this 4-acre block, a really steep terrace, or steep hill, and Kenny Volk's like, would you plant some Syrah on that for me? And so we planted some Syrah for him, and that was our first Syrah planting, and then he loved that, so we eventually bought more acreage, put in a bunch of 20 acres of Rhone varieties.
Cool.
And then, yeah, away we went with the Rhones.
So let's back up, though.
Backing up.
We're going to back up, because this is really cool. So you moved up here in the 80s. How old were you when you moved up here?
I was 10.
You were 10. You have any siblings? Love it. Good for you.
Makes it easier.
Good for you, yeah. All right, so you're 10, and you lived
surf
in
the kid,
surf
kids. Surf
kids. What was it like for you
to move? It was crazy.
And like, this shit
in
was
the middle
in a planet.
Of nowhere,
this shit was
this,
like
middle of
what
nowhere.
Is this crap?
Yeah, it was funny, you know, cruising around the the vineyards in my OP shorts, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was awesome. You know, it was like, you know, Don Burns moved in next door and Mark Adams was over there, and so struck up a friendship.
Now, you're a little bit older than Mark. You hung out with his brother? How did, I forgot.
So, like, yeah, Rod and I were the same age, his older brother.
Yeah.
And yeah,
so Mark's, he was like kind of like looking up to you.
But yeah, but he was still like, he was cool. He was cool for a younger kid, you know.
I mean, he's Mark's fucking cool, dude. Like, he's cool. You don't get cool.
I remember like he was probably like, you know, when I first moved there, I was like maybe 11. He was like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But he still had, he had a full mohawk. Like...
That is so...
I was like, that kid's only 8, but he's cool.
And so you surfed and probably rode, like, you had to probably rode a dirt bike, but,
yeah,
like,
but
no ATV. So, like, what was, like, it was culture shock. It had to be culture shock.
Yeah, it was culture shock for sure. And, like, yeah, we went to the beach here. It's like, oh, it's only 20 minutes away from the beach, but it's freaking cold.
Yeah, you can't get in the water up, man.
Yeah, it's cold. Yeah. I had no wetsuit. So, yeah, pretty much stopped going in the water at that point. Yeah. My dad was a surfer, you know, they're all bunch of surfers in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they left their boards. Boards got left back in Encinitas, you know. But it was culture shock. But it was still cool.
And like you said, like there was like Uberoth, there was like Pazenti. Like we're talking, I mean, even right now, like for me, a guy who lives on the East Coast, like it's like, it's still kind of podunk here. Like, it's fucking country in Paso.
It was podunk.
Yeah.
I went to Templeton High School. Yeah. Class 40 kids.
Holy shit.
We played 8-man football. We didn't have enough people to make a full 11. So, I was on the 8-man football team.
Holy shit. What position did you play?
Defensive back and receiver.
Well,
usually I had to go...
Yeah.
Both ways, you know.
You're not a big man. Deep back, not defensive end. Okay,
exactly.
Okay.
All right,
my mind's up. No, you can see it. Yeah, you're fast. You can, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Get away from it. Running around, they couldn't catch me, you know.
Yeah. And then what did you go off to school? Did you stay around here?
Yeah,
for school?
So went to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo.
Okay, so you kind of stayed local, not too far
not
away.
Not too far. Moved to the big city of San Luis. But yeah, not too far. Went away thinking I'm done with the farm life, kind of, you know, like.
Yeah. So what did you major in? I know it's an ag school, but what did you major in?
I majored in botany.
But I'm not gonna go back to the farm.
You know, this is botany. I like growing plants,
right,
but not
right,
grapes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, then I did realize it was pretty damn cool.
Okay.
You know, all my college friends, all my roommates, they all like would end up working up here on the vineyard,
yeah,
you know, weekends and breaks and summertime. We'd all come up here work, and it was pretty cool. They were like, "Yeah, it's pretty dope." And so yeah, after college, I was like, you know what? Actually, this is cool. So, moved back, met my wife Heather.
Is she from here?
She's from Pasadena, but we met at Cal Poly.
Okay.
So yeah, I dragged her back
to
the farm.
You
city girl.
Snagged one. Yeah,
she was like, "What are we doing? We're moving to your farm."
You and Mark did the same shit.
Uh-huh.
Like he got Sierra was a opera singer from down in LA. Like, oh come on, baby, come see.
It'll be cool.
Like the Green Acres. Okay.
Yeah, they just didn't know what they were getting themselves into. Moved back. Started managing the vineyard.
About what time is that?
This was
what
like 96, 95.
Okay.
My good friend and roommate, Matt Trevison, from Cal Poly, was working here at Justin Winery and then at Wild Horse. And I'm selling grapes to Wild Horse. I'm growing the grapes, selling to Wild Horse. And we're hanging out with Chris Cherry, pre-Via Creek opening. He's making us food for his new restaurant, showing us all these cool wines from around the world, and totally opening our eyes to what wine is, you know, because he had come from the restaurant business already, so he was savvy in that. We were, you know, pretty limited in our focus at that time. So he's opened up our eyes, and Matt and I are like, you know, we can do this. We can make some wine. You know, I got the grapes, and you're working at a winery, and... I'd worked at a winery too a little bit and made wine with my dad. I'm like, you know, let's pool our resources and make some wine together. So where he was working Wild Horse. It's like, yeah, you guys can use our equipment. When we're done at the end of the day, you can use our equipment. Just clean up when you're done. So super cool arrangement. Ken Volk was so awesome to us. Gave us the, you know, the big break. You know, we were penniless kids, you know. Yeah. So I kind of, you know, pulled a little grapes here and there from our family vineyard, and we had the space there at Wild Horse, so we'd pick grapes all day long, go there at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they were done, and then we'd make wine till, you know, 1 in the morning and clean everything up and sleep for 5 hours and get up and do it all again. But yeah, we had the space and made some wine, so that's when we started Lenny Colodo. Lenny Colodo was was our label. Did that for 4 years with Matt, and then we got a divorce. Totally happy, mutual, you know, but it was time, you know, two chefs in the kitchen kind of a thing. So I let him keep the name Lenny Colodo and most of the inventory, but I kept a little bit. I kept the bone rocks that we had made. So the straw from here, I kept 10 barrels from the 2000 vintage, 10 barrels from the 2001 vintage, and bottled that, and that started Saxon.
Okay, so let's back up to the good old days, though, when your dad, who's a vet, like, who planted, like, that Chardonnay and that Pinot Blanc?
So, yeah, my folks did everything.
Shit.
Everything themselves. My uncle was living in the house that I'm living in now, so he was living here with his dad, my mom's dad.
Your grandfather.
So my grandfather.
He could be your grandfather.
Yeah. Which side it was on, you know, which side. Yep. So it was all done by the three of them and me. So, yeah, my uncle, my dad dug every hole, pounded every stake, and we put in every vine. And
did you help as a kid?
Put in all the drippers and all that, you know, that stuff. Yeah. So I was out there with them every day. So, yeah, it was a lot of work, hard work, but they did everything. Yeah, my dad was the only guy on the tractor out there, and we did everything. The day after Christmas, we would start pruning, and hopefully we'd be done by March when things started growing. And you know, it's like we're always out there.
And so, this is like, so for your dad, like when, so he planned all this, and you said your dad was in a tasting group when he was down in.
Yeah.
So when you were a kid, though, and when you moved here, was there wine on the table? Like, because you mentioned Chris Cherry kind of opened your world, but like, obviously your dad must have drank some.
Yeah, no, they were into wine.
Okay,
And there was always wine around, but it was like, it was around, but it was like, it was like. There would be special bottles once. You know who would do it? Was Don's uncle Tom Westberg.
Yeah.
So he actually connecting everything up for you. I don't know if Don did it already, but so Don's uncle Tom had a little wine shop pretty much across the street from my dad's vet practice.
Okay.
In Encinitas.
Oh, I didn't know. No, Don did not connect those dots. So my dad. I have to talk to every fucking body.
My dad got to meet Uncle Tom by buying wine from him. So they were in the wine group together. So that was like, he would get special bottles from Tom and like open up some cool shit. But it was like, you know, it was like Napa Cab and stuff. Some Bordeaux and stuff. Yeah. And that was around.
Okay, so that was around. Uh-huh. And like you said, your dad made wine. So you're selling off the fruit. I get it.
Yeah, so we're selling them all.
What was he making? He must have saved a little bit of something.
So, yeah, we make a barrel of red and barrel of white pretty much every year. So the white would be, you know, he'd do Chardonnay or Pinot Blanc from here. And then the red, there's a little vineyard next to us called the Cherry Vineyard that Matt kept going with Lenny Colodo, makes the cherry red from it. So a little Zen vineyard. So they let us farm that, and so that was Zen from there. And then he would get some Petit Sirah from Shell Creek, which is a cool old
Because that's where the old vine Chenin is from Shell Creek, and I've actually had some producer, like I bought from like Last Ball or somebody, like it was a Petit Sirah. It was very good.
Yeah, it's a neat area out there.
Yeah.
So they were doing that, and that was kind of one of the learning experiences that we had along the way, is that he's doing this Zin, this old vine, dry farm Zin, and super high alcohol, super high acid, just screaming acidity. And he's trying to like deacidify it and like, you know, get it manageable by itself. And at the same time, making this Petite Syrah from Shell Creek that has like no acid. And he's acidifying that and like trying to make that normalize. And then at one point I was like, you know what? If we put those two things together, you don't need to fuck with either one. And they're a happy balance, you know? And that was like, oh, there's this art of blending where you can like take these things that are like, you know, and make this happy medium. And so that was like, yeah. So it was usually...
Those guys never heard of a company called Ridge?
Yeah, no. But it was
that
like...
That blends Petite Syrah.
Yeah, no, totally. So that was like, you know what?
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
Okay.
So, there was always a barrel usually of that. We called it just, you know, the house red. And the white.
Okay.
That's
how he was making. Okay. And so, and just a quick aside, because you said Petite Syrah. What the fuck is up with the 2016 Hex? That bottle of wine is just a weird bottle of wine, man. It's so, like, I'm like, I'll never, I mean, I could drink it, but I'll never, either I'm going to pull the cork 4 days before I drink and just let it log the kit, or I'm just going to leave it to, like, my grandson.
It's a beast, huh?
It is a beast.
Yeah, so.
And that's that Petite Syrah beast.
The Petite Syrah and the Grenache. Yeah. So, like, that Grenache is, see the top of the hill right
yep,
there?
Yep.
Those head train vines up there?
Mm-hmm.
So that's our old Grenache that goes in the Hex. And
Okay. Since
it's on that south slope, gets all the sun,
yep. It
makes this super concentrated, really dark Grenache too. And it's like, sometimes you gotta fight fire with fire. And putting that Petite in there too, it actually like, they danced well together.
Yeah.
But we age it 3 years in barrel, you know, to soften it up some. So yeah, that's where the Hex comes from. But yeah, so it's the dark side of Grenache.
Got it.
Where our Rocket Block is this north slope. It's like light and ethereal and aromatic.
Yep.
Where the Hex is just dark and brooding.
Yeah, it's a beast. It's a freaking beast. All right, so you're home. You come home. You got the girl with you. You're like,
start having some kids.
Yeah, you're working on the farm with your dad, and then like you're doing the project with Matt
doing Lenny
Coloto. Was there any like your dad was like, okay, cool, like you're doing your thing, like was or like what?
Yeah,
was
like he was always he liked making wine, but he was always really scared of selling wine. And like back then, all the winemakers we knew, they were just on the road all the time selling their product. And like he's like, I don't want.
Yeah, I mean, people.
I love being on the farm.
It's a hustle.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, it's particularly like so, and it's particularly if you're just all you do is make wine. Like you said, he's like, I could just sell grapes. I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, because they moved because they wanted the country life. They didn't
want to be a farmer.
But like, you know, you buy grapes or you buy bulk wine, you got to go around the country selling your
mm-hmm.
shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and he didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that either. So that's why I kept things super small.
Yep.
I'm like, I'll only make enough that I could, you know, sell direct and be done with it because I don't want to be out there. You know, I want to be here on my farm. And, you know.
So with Lenny Coloto, I love it. We're in it. There's a
the fruit
he died.
Bomb,
yeah, he died.
Here, can you toss it?
No, that's good. I'll drink.
Take
around
him down.
No, I'll take him down. It's just protein. I've eaten crickets and shit before. But you guys did, I mean, got some acclaim.
Yeah, so this is kind of the very beginning of, like, forums on the internet talking about wine and shit.
Yeah,
you know,
pre-Instagram
and whatnot, there was just bulletin boards. But it was a great way of, like, spreading communications and stuff. So, like, some people big on that, like, tasted our wine early on. I forget how they originally found us, but they, like, I'm kind of blown away by it. Started hyping us up on these internet boards.
It was like Berserkers or something.
Yeah, this is even before Berserkers was Robert Parker's board.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, and then Berserkers came after that. So yeah, so that's where it kind of first started getting the word out there. So by the time we started selling wine, there was already a little buzz. Yeah. You know, we got some good little write-ups. But the first like magazine that ever wrote about us was it's called The Connoisseur's Guide.
Ah.
And they tasted our, you know, our first bottling of Lenny Coloto, the 98s. And we were like, oh, yeah, getting some official reviews. And they were like, they usually have like one wine glass, two wine glass, three wine glass. We got upside down wine glasses.
Mm. like finish this
they're
shit.
They're like, this shit is so bad. The fucking upside down wine glass. So that was like our first reviews But luckily...
Dump it.
Luckily that didn't mean a whole lot. But yeah, people that were chasing it were loving it. We got some good hype, good publicity, and yeah, started selling things. This was back writing letters, you know?
Yeah.
I wrote a letter, sent it out in the mail. People would get it, open it up, fill out their thing. Sometimes they fax it in, you know? They like fill out their order form and fax in their order to us. And the fact, we didn't have a fax machine, but my mom did. So she would get the fax orders coming in on her thing. You guys got an order for some wine! Yeah, it was funny. People mailing us checks, and then we would ship it out. You know?
Jesus, you're making me feel old, man. Yeah. Fax machine. People mailing
fax
the check.
Orders.
We got PayPal, Venmo, cash. Yeah. No. I'm going to fax it in. Uh-huh. And they're like, wait, is that four bottles or three? Because the fucking paper was off.
Yeah, and it was funny. And then, yeah, and like, yeah, all the checks and like, one of the
you had to go to the bank. There was no taking a picture of your phone. You had to take these.
It was cool though. You open the mailbox and it'd be like 12
mailbox 12, money. That's so cool.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, got some checks. Woo! Gonna buy a steak today, man. Yeah, that was cool. And then like when we did get some good, like I think Robert Parker gave us.
When did he come out?
He came around right when Matt and I kind of had broken up and we're each going our own ways.
Okay.
So by the time he came around, I think like he tasted the Lenny Clotos like right after I left, but before Saxon had come out yet.
Right.
And he dug them. And then I think he found out that, you know, I was involved, but, you know, wasn't there anymore.
Okay.
So he actually, you know, was coming through with Hospice de Rome to taste big tasting here in Paso once a year.
Okay.
And, so yeah, I submitted them to the big tasting.
What year is this?
This is like the vintages were 2000 and 2001.
Okay, got it.
And yeah, he tasted them in the big tasting, and I think there's three of them. You know, I did like Broken Stones and Two Bone Rocks. And he's like, this is the best trilogy since Lord of the Rings.
I was thinking like, because for him, he was probably looking for the next SQN.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he loved him in that, and then the next year when he came out, he called me on the freaking phone.
Back in the day, like,
yeah.
And you know what was fucked
up?
Back in the day,
my house.
You could be like, you know how he got your number too?
It was the bottle. I had my home number.
Well, you had your number, but like literally, you know, I'm
the phone
book.
Yeah,
I called information when I met Gary Pisoni back in 19. I'm like, I don't know for Pisoni Vineyards.
Is there a listing for Smith?
And Smith. Exactly, Justin Smith, Paso Robles, California.
Yeah, totally.
And you would get your number. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he called me up.
Were you like, am I getting punked?
Yeah, totally.
Hi, Justin, this is Robert Parker.
It's like, I don't know if you've heard of me.
He said he didn't know if you heard of him.
But I'm a wine writer. It's like, yeah, I've heard of you. It's like, I want to come taste it. So yeah, that was awesome. So he would come out here tasting our cellar. And I did that for years.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so...
So that's, yeah. So about that time,
yep.
Robert Parker blew us up.
Okay.
And then Spectator kind of got a hold of it too. And Spectator started blowing us up. And then, yeah, when the 07 vintage came, Robert Parker giving it 100 points. So that was like the first 100 point from the area.
So you were the first 100 point wine.
First 100 point from Paso. And I got to say, the only Robert Parker 100 point ever come from Paso. Because he doesn't rate Paso anymore.
I know. Like, no. I like that distinction because wine is like, oh my God, I got myself in trouble in up in Walla Walla, Grenache Fest, because someone was like, yeah, we were the number one a year. I was like, from who? Because I drink Grenache. Like, this is okay. It was so fucked up. I was like, from who? I'm like, you going to hang your hat on that? Like, with a bunch of people like Jerome Varietals? And even
my neighbor down the road says the best wine he's ever had.
Listen, there's so many fucking guys out there. I need to get Luca Maroni. You heard of Luca Maroni, who used to, I guess, work for the Gambler Russell. He does Italian wine. Luca Maroni is notorious. Like, it'll be like 98 points. It'll be a $15 wine. It'd be delicious, but it'll be like, I say this about, there's people, I'm sure you've heard this, people who don't like scores, meh. But I'm like, okay, it's America. First of all, we keep score here. That's what we do. Okay. And all the big chateaux in France want a big score. Everybody wants a big score. So just stop with your shit and de-stem your fruit and pick it ripe. You know who I'm talking about. Be clean in your winery.
Yeah, totally.
But no, and that's very, that's a huge distinction because, you know, like as people grow, as people grow, you know, like, you know, I love James Suckling, but does he even review wines anymore? I doubt it. He's a behemoth. Good for him. He's fucking a behemoth. But, you know, you know, Josh was great, you know, and like, and I, for me, and I, me and Owen Borgreen talked about it. Like, it's also for me, I do have this thing where I get, I don't put my foot in my mouth. I know why some people you like me don't, but like it's palates, right? It's like, how does a palate align? Because how does your palate align with the critic's palate, right? That's a big thing.
So when you find a critic that you like that aligns with you, you follow them.
You go with them.
And they say it's good, and you're like, you know what?
Like, you know what? But, we drink alike, you know.
Exactly.
So that's huge. And so you run this with Heather. When did you and Heather get? What year did you guys get married?
95.
Okay, so you. Okay, so before you moved. Okay.
So we were.
So she's been in this with you
from the get go.
From the get go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know. When your family was selling fruit, was this, it was always named James Berry Vineyard, or was that something that...
No, yeah, my parents named James Berry Vineyard.
Okay.
Yeah, James Berry Spence, my dad. Yeah, so it's always been James.
What's Berry. The Berry part of the...
it's just his middle name, James Berry Smith.
His middle name is Berry?
But yeah, with an E. So he thought it was kind of funny. Yeah, his middle name was Berry with an E.
That is very...
It's grown berries.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. That's funny. So, like, how many acres is considered the James Berry?
So we got about, 42 acres.
42 acres, okay.
And yeah, so we just slowly, you know, back in the beginning, we were selling 95% of it and keeping 5%. And now at this point, we're keeping 95% and selling 5%.
Like, okay, so you're making that wine out. You got that 100 point out of the 5% of grapes you got, or no?
Back then, we were doing about 3,000 cases.
Okay.
So, yeah, by 07 came around, we were doing a decent amount.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many, so who, like, back then, who was getting fruit versus who is now? Because this is great. I want to hit it. Like.
So, like, Wild Horse was still, like, probably our biggest single person we were selling it to. But we were selling it to, like, PAX.
Okay.
Pax was in here. And then Wells Guthrie from Copan was in here early. And Mike Officer from Carlisle. So they were all buying stuff down here, even though they were up there. And then Via Creek. So we were selling to them from the get-go. Jacob Toft. And back then we were selling to, before we pulled out the Chardonnay, like Broadside. Was doing some Chardonnay.
Oh, shit. Wow.
And they were doing a James Berry Chardonnay. I actually popped one of those last week. It was tasting pretty good still.
Nice.
Who else were we selling to? Brian Benson. He was getting fruit. And Don and Mark. So yeah, most. I've still got, of course, Don and Mark and Via Creek.
Right, right.
Around
your OGs, OGs.
I got Guillaume from Clos Saline and Anthony over at Canaro. He's still doing Roussan from here, but at this point, Summerwood was one of the big players back then too. Who was doing that was Scott Hawley was their winemaker before he started Torrin. So Summerwood was it's a little place on 46, but Scott convinced them to buy a bunch of our grapes because he knew it was good.
He knew it was good fruit, yeah.
Yeah, but at one point I'm like, Scott, why don't you start buying this for yourself and make your own label?
Yeah, screw those guys. Uh-huh. Right. And when you got that 100 points. So before that, I mean, like Parker had to hit you up like a 94. Like you,
got some 98s. We got our 03 got like a 98 or something.
Okay, so that 03, let's talk about that because that got a 98, right? And like, that had to fuck with people's heads around here.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
like, no, what the
was,
fuck?
That was big. I was like, yeah.
They're like, those motherfuckers like, grow Chardonnay.
And like, yeah, so, I made like Rocket Block and Bone Rock and Broken Stones or something, I think.
Right.
And then you like, they all got like 97s, 98s. And yeah, it was huge. And that was at the point, too, we're still doing mail orders. And all of a sudden, Robert Parker, this is the power of Parker, you know, in that first 98 where we're, you know, faxes are coming in.
Right, right. People
we're talking about mailing shit out. And then all of a sudden, we open the mailbox and it's fucking.
Yeah.
And we're like, whoa. You know, and that was the power of Parker. And like, at that vintage, like, you know, you send out all the things and people right. ordered so fucking much, we like sold more than we actually had.
Yeah.
And so we had to like, write checks back to everybody. Right. Be like, I know you ordered 8 bottles, but we can only sell you 4. So here's 4 bottles and a check for $220.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, so it was like, that's how things are going. So we had like, imagine Heather and I are on our kitchen floor.
Yeah.
And we're trying to be fair about it. And so we're like, got everything sorted by the date that they mailed it to see like, who got it first.
Yeah, you were trying to do first in line. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So you,
first in,
you know,
first
this,
out.
This one
yeah.
came in before this yeah. one, so they should get more wine, and yeah, it was
nightmare. First of all, I was expecting to say, me and Heather, we're just laying on the kitchen floor, just doing snow angels in the check. This is the money!
He's throwing the checks up in the air.
Exactly, so do ah! That would be great. That's a great image. But I also, whenever you're telling that, I had Greg Brewer on, he said the same story when Brewer Clifton, like, Parker's like, this is the most profound Pinot Noir I say to Brewer Clifton. He's like, all of a sudden, dude, like, our facts are saved. Like, come in, like, there's just faxes on the fucking floor.
Yeah.
Just, like,
yeah.
like the, and that was the power of Parker.
Yeah, it was amazing. Then,
yeah.
I mean, he was, like, the only, like, kind of singular voice.
Right, I mean, that was before Suckling had left the Spectator.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at the Spectator. You had Lowby.
Spectator was still big, but it was, like,
But the Spectator is a different cut.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah,
it's a different cut overall. Yeah.
The people that follow Parker were into wine.
Right.
They were the ones that wanted to be on the list, wanted to be the first one to get it, wanted to have the 100-pointer before their friends did. Where, yeah, Spectator was more, people were like leisurely looking at it.
Yeah.
They weren't like super crazy.
Like, oh, honey, we have Life Magazine, Sports Illustrated, and the Wine Spectator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see what wines we should buy. Oh, look at this.
I like what you said, yeah, because inside of the Parker debate, is like, well, he ruined wine, and well, I'm like, did you talk to anybody that got a good score from who was struggling as a winemaker? He likes, you know. to this day, like, I get, when people get mad at critics, I'm like, dude, you don't have to listen to critics. You can do what you want to do. You like, don't say, oh, the wines cost so much. Like, you, because no one says it. You figured out. Like, I didn't, but you figured out. If you want the wine, like you said, Wine Geeks figured out.
Yeah,
you know, like sideways. Like he had a bottle of fucking, was it 62 Cheval Blanc? He figured out. He's a fucking English teacher.
Yeah,
middle school. Why do people figure it out?
Yeah, and what's so cool about now too is that there's so many voices out there.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
it's so easy to find who aligns with you.
Yeah,
and I get the criticism of Parker being like his palate and like. And that was like the only voice. And if you're getting in line with that, you're kind of fucked. And I kind of get that. But like now it's like, yeah, that's not.
Yeah,
a thing
I mean,
anymore.
It's not a thing anymore. But and to that point, like that's his palate.
Yeah, it's not like, his fault.
Right. So
it's a lot better to be like really singular in what you like.
Absolutely.
Than to be like just middle of the road and like everything is just good,
yeah.
But nothing is spectacular,
right?
You know, I'd rather people hate it or love it than everybody.
You
like
make
it.
People don't understand. Like, I'm gonna give you guys a business tip. You make more money either being polarizing.
Yeah.
People love it. Like, look at fucking Howard Stern,
uh-huh.
right? Fucking billionaire, and fucking people hated him, but people who liked him loved him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan. Biggest podcaster of all time.
I know. Unfortunately, it sucks polarizing,
yep.
you know?
But
we all
it does
be,
suck.
But
we all want to be loved and liked.
That's what sells.
But
know?
But biblical. It's in the Bible. There's a scripture. My mother was really religious. So it's like don't be lukewarm. Either be hot or cold. If you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out, is what it says in the Bible, right? So, like, it's hard. Even for me with the show, I'm like, somebody I should have said, I'm like, no, I'm going to fucking say it because...
Yeah.
Because I'm not... Everybody's not going to like me anyway, so...
Yeah, no. Yeah. Yeah, there's no room for just okay.
Yeah. I love there's no room for okay.
You know? It's like, we don't do this to find out what's all right. You know? We want to know, like, what's awesome, what's spectacular, what's complete shit.
Yeah. Right. I totally fucking... You know, that's probably a good time to take a quick break on spectacular versus complete shit. So we'll be right back with more Justin Smith.
Hey, I don't know if I told you guys this earlier, but last year, Grenache Fest sold out within 72 hours. So if you want to be there on November 8th, 2024, make sure that you go over to GrenacheFest.com and sign up for the email list so you will be the first to know when tickets go on sale. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. This was a one-of-a-kind wine and music festival like no other I've ever seen before. Don't miss out. Go to GrenacheFest.com for more information.
Okay, we're back. We were talking about polarizing people and, you know, just fucking...
The good and the bad of it. I hate it on our... political scene, you know,
yeah,
how it's just really divided the whole country.
Well, that's somewhere where we need to be in the middle, because we all live. It's like whatever, 300 million of us. Like, okay, not everybody's gonna be happy, but we have to like
we all gotta live together.
That is one point where, but again. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. But yes,
I know, and I don't want to get in that either. But I hate how divided everything has become.
No,
it's either this or that. Where there used to be a nice common ground.
Yeah, it was like
everybody worked together.
Like, you're Republican, I'm a Democrat. But okay, I don't want to really pay high taxes. Like there's shit people could agree on, right?
Exactly.
Now people, like these bills they pass through. This is what, like these riders and stuff, and they're like, whoa, why are you defunding libraries? To get border patrol, like, it's like the weird shit. Like, and it's like, and then it becomes polarizing.
Yeah.
What I love about wine, typically, is we all can find something we like about wine, and typically, well, you know, that sounds like a
polarizing
aspects asshole.
Too, but then, you know, exactly. It's we can all arrive on this no matter where we're coming from.
All right. So, you're getting grapes from your family's vineyard. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You get 100 points. What was like next? Like, did you go, hey, mom and dad, like, we really on to something here?
Blowing up.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, so the Parker Hunter was the first, and then that same 07 got the Wine Spectator Wine of the Year.
Which did you guys hear that? Because that's huge, right?
So
because,
that was like, reached a whole different audience.
Exactly.
Where like, I was with the wine geeks and the people that are super into it, and then all of a sudden it's like walking through the airport and there's me on the cover and it's fucking trippy shit, you know? And so it was a whole different blow up. And now we've got, you know, a big wait list and, you know, everybody wants to get the wine, but, you know, we just got what we got. So we didn't decide, okay, we're going to blow this up and make it huge. We're like, you know, James Baird's going to produce what it's going to produce. You know, back then, the 07, we were doing 1,000 cases of it. Now we're doing like 1,200 cases of James Baird. It's like, that's it.
Well, I mean, it can only produce so much,
I'm not
going to
drop it anymore. Those vines are going to give us what they're going to give us. So it's like, I'd rather like keep it small, just be on super on top of it, making it the best I can possibly make it, and then trying to blow up and get big, and you know, I'm happy doing this.
So Parker did, like, when you got to 100, did they give you advanced scores, like you defected, like here are your scores, or did you had to open up the advocate?
No, I had a buddy in Baltimore, who would get it kind of before everybody else because
he's in Maryland.
It's
there in a day,
so he would get it like the day that he mailed it, but Bob would never say anything until, you know, it was in the mail. He wouldn't say anything until people were opening it up. And so he's the one that called me, and he's like, and like every time Bob came out, I would be like, oh shit, it's coming out, he's gonna call me today, and I'm like, what did I get? Like, he's like, all right, sit down.
Yeah.
God, 100 points. Like, yeah, so that was
And then with the Spectator, what do they do? Like, hi.
They actually, yeah. So they
because their thing, they have such lead
countdown,
time.
Yeah.
And because they have lead time, like when I was in the winery, it was like they have like their shit is planned so far out in advance. It's like, they went to the photographer out. You know.
Well, they had so they do their countdown online. You know, the top 10 ones.
Right.
So the year before, my 06 Broken Stones got like number 12. So like next year, I'm like, all right, maybe we'll be in the top 10. That'd be awesome. And so they're counting down every day online. They'd show two bottles, you know. And then they got down to the last one, you know, and I was like, fuck. And but then somebody realized that, like, you could, like, do with some kind of hack to see, like, what that bottle was behind on the screen. Like,
oh, okay.
They had it just, like, fuzzed out
Okay,
so someone actually hacked it and said, the Chance Berry 07. Like, so then it was on the internet before they released.
Oh, my God.
So then...
That's awesome.
So then Jim Lobby, like, called me up. He's like, I don't know if you've heard or not, but...
You're like, yeah, man.
The news is out. Your 07 Chance Berry is going to be wine of the year. And, yeah, I was like...
What was the blend on the 07 Chance Berry?
So the 07 Chance Berry was... my first year that it was Grenache based.
Okay.
So up until then it was Syrah based, but still, and we did, you know, we did a Rock-A-Block which was Grenache based, and we did James Berry that was like a Syrah and then Grenache Mourvedre, and then Rock-A-Block was almost all Grenache. And then in 07 I was playing with the blends, and I put kind of them two, both of them together, what would have been James Berry Syrah and what was the pure Rock-A-Block, and it was awesome. I could tell it was awesome wine. And so we didn't do a Rock-A-Block. We just did a James Berry, and the James Berry was Grenache based for the first time. And it was almost kind of a fluke, you know. It was like, I put it together and I really liked it. Showed it to Heather. She's like, that's the best wine you ever made. So it was like, all right, I got to bottle it. Poured it for Parker. He's like, yeah, I'd agree with Heather. like, Heather said this is the best one I've ever made. And he's like, I agree with her. And I was like, you gave my last one. So that kind of means it's got to be either a 99 or a 100.
He's like, come on, man. Not a 99 for the best. Come on, man. Yeah, he'd be like, come on, man.
Totally. Yeah, I like it. I couldn't sleep like that. You know, the day before meeting with Parker, I'd be like up all night, just totally like nervous. Be like,
that's so funny.
Tasty with Parker tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that must have been fucking nerve wracking.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, you know, I was in my 20s. You know,
like, shit. So, and inside of that, like you said, so, you know, you're really close. You have good friends with people who have come and, you know, who learned to make wine from you. Mark Adams, At Ledge, Don Burns, Turtle Rock.
So back in the day,
yep.
You know, I built the little winery.
Yep.
So this is a big fancy winery now.
Yes.
So
schmancy. Justin Justin's done quite well for himself, folks.
So the OG winery, 1,800 square feet garage,
yep.
Attached to my house. Tiny little thing. Two rooms, 900 square feet each. One barrels, one fermentation. And in that little space was me with Saxum. First year I was making wine for dinner. We had Booker in there. We had Via Creek. We had Terry Hogue. So all five of us are making wine in this teeny little space.
That is a good cork.
Sorry.
It's okay.
And it's kind of mushy too.
It's okay. I know how to do this shit.
Oh. Nice. So yeah.
I'm my own Duran.
All of us in this little teeny spot. And yeah.
Oh wow.
So now, yeah, at this point, Booker and Dinner have gone off and sold for billions.
I know that fucking guy was on the podcast for you. You're right. It's been too long. I've been talking around everybody around you.
You've been circling, dude.
I'm totally stalking you, man. Fanboying and shit. but Mark talks about same thing. You know, Mark was into music and he was working down at Sony and he moved back home. And you're like, dude, you know, fucking, I can show you how to make wine. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if we were just talking, but like he was the assistant winemaker on your 100-point wine. I think he was like, yeah. So he was like, dude, that was so cool to be assistant. Well, yeah. But what's it like? What was it like to see people you kind of trained. Like, Don's gotten out at 100 points.
No, I'm stoked.
You know, fucking Mark had got a 90. He's like, God damn it. I think he finally got 100 from somebody. Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. It's so awesome to see the success. Yeah. Of, you know, it's all, it's not competitive at all.
No, you got
around here. We're all just like,
that's just your own path, though. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, you mentioned Jensen, you know, everybody, you know, my favorite neighbor is because Stefan is a neighbor and taught him how to make, you know, just, there was such a spirit of collaboration here that,
totally.
Mm-hmm. Which is super cool. This fucking guy wants some wine. Yeah. But when you make a wine like this, right? So, you know, you said peak of ripeness. So in the glass now, what, we just poured the red.
05.
Yeah.
So this is a Jensberry from 05, back when it was Syrah based.
Goddamn.
But this was a kind of a special one-off that we did where it stayed in barrel for an extra 2 years.
Okay.
Just kind of playing around with different experiments. So, Jamesberry, Syrah base, but yeah, 44 months in barrel.
So, this is 19 years old. I'm drinking a fucking, so this is a 19-year-old Saxum wine, everybody. Holy shit. And see, if you're going to, I've been talking to a lot of people, and I'm in Paso, so the wines are big, but I was saying, like, typically my window is like 10 years because the fruit falls off of most wines, and I hate, you know, searching, but mm-hmm. like, this is incredible.
Still got 19, fruit.
Still got a ton of fruit. 19 years old, mm-hmm. man.
No, I agree with you. I prefer fruit still, but yeah, it's fun to see them when there's
Of course, yeah, yeah. I had a 2013 Paderewski that I bought in a Magnum at a retail store. I had no idea the provenance, and I bought it in 2019. And I cracked it Christmas Eve, and it was so freaking good, man.
Oh, good.
It was.
It worried me when you say you know the province because like who knows.
Where well, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, like you know, I walked in the store and it's standing up. I'm like, and it was like I paid like $130 for it. I was like, I'll take it. I'm like, this is a steal.
Nice.
And cool. It was great.
Good,
and,
you know, good to hear. It's
yeah,
so good.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Nice. So yeah, these are all made in the little garage.
Yeah. Working with people and teaching people, what's that like working with people?
Yeah, you know, because what I do is so simple. Mm. And, you know, I think the problem people get into is they try and complicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole philosophy is get some good grapes. Grow some good grapes that don't need to be fucked with in the winery. Wow. And you're good to go. So, like, when they're perfect out there in the field and you've got that perfect cluster and it's like holding up great and the acid is good and it's not turning to raisins and it's not green. It's like, I talk about the peak of ripeness, you know, that's kind of, it's all different for everybody, but yeah, when you're eating a peach, you know, and right. like you taste that peach and it's not too soft, but it's still juicy and
right.
sweet.
Like,
it's like,
yeah.
I'm looking for that in the fruit, capturing that. When you capture that in a simple way where you're just like fermenting it and pressing it to barrel and not fucking with it at all.
Yeah.
Tastes like the fruit.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So it's like, yeah, when my friends are like, how do you do it? You know, when they, I'm like, shit, dude, you can do it too. Let me show you. It's easy. Stuff's easy. You can grow in the grapes, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No, it's fun. It's fun to help them out.
And you said something before, and we have to talk about it, because it's Paso Robles. Blending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we started talking about it with, like, yeah, I mean, that's, to me, we're not about varietals. To me, I like to take the vineyard, and when I lay out a vineyard, there's, you know, the different aspects, the lower spots, the rocky south slopes, the cooler north slopes. They all have different varieties, and rootstocks will do good in those spots, you know, from, like, a cold north slope is going to be good for whites or Syrah, keep that spice in the Syrah, and a big hot south slope might be great for Mataro or Grenache. And like, so I plant the vineyard kind of according to what's going to do good where and not like what I want to make. And then when I make it, it's the vineyard kind of speaking. It's like, so it could be Grenache based, it could be Mourvedre based, it could be Syrah based, kind of on how that vineyard's laid out and the different aspects. And they're all the best fruits that can grow. You know, you don't want to be growing the wrong variety and the wrong slope. So as long as that vineyard's dialed like that, it's going to make some tasty wine. So yeah. So
like there's no, like there's never, it's different every vintage because you're working with what the vineyard gives you. Like, so it's not like, you know, there's like you have a program, but these people have a program, and it's we're always 85
cab. Yeah, it's not that 15 at all. No, it's all vineyard based, and on year to year yields change, so like the percents change, and you know all that. There's no program at all, you know. So we keep it just the vineyard name, and then we break it down for people that want to know, you know, what's in it. But like it's about this is our Janesbury vineyard, you know. It is what it is. This is, you know, Paderewski vineyard, you know. It's not necessarily always Syrah-based or always Mourvedre-based or always Zin-based.
Yeah, that Paderewski was Zinfandel-based in 2013. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it floats around on what's doing best.
And, I, you know, Mark and Donnie have both said, like, and with, you know, they know you forever, but, like, I don't know what I'm getting. Like, you're getting this much, like you just tell them they're getting this much Syrah, this much Grenache, and they have to fucking figure it out. But I just think that's so cool. It's not like, I want to buy this. Like, no, this is what you're getting. It's this much Syrah, this much Grenache, this much Graciano.
It's always fun, too. It's usually a big day when we're picking all kinds of shit here. And so I know, like, okay, we're bringing in these Grenache blocks and this Mourvedre block and this Syrah block. And so I'll just, like, have all the fruit out. I'll be like, all right, guys. Pick your favorite 8 boxes, you know. And so they're like tasting them all. Like Donnie's like, oh, I'm gonna make this one Grenache. And Mark's like, oh, I'm gonna do, you know, more Grenache. So it's fun to see them do that. And they make their own thing, you know. And they make totally different wines. And
what I love is like all your wines are totally different too. But they you can see there's a through line. But like
no, like the different sites, yeah, you know, express themselves differently, you know. And now too that we're getting into our two new vineyards, mountainous. Yeah, we've got a new site up in York Mountain, and then we've got another new site that's even more coastal over on the other side of the ridge, so more towards Cayucas. So it's a lot cooler, but you taste it, and it's still Saxon, even though it's a pretty different spot.
Is that kind of like a sine qua non thing where they bought the vineyards and like there's the house style almost like, you know, like to have next of kin and like the third.
It's
twin.
It's going to be under Saxon. We're going to bottle the first one. It's not going to be a different program, but we thought about doing that. Yeah, maybe a different label, but yeah, it's Saxon through and through. So we're gonna keep it as a Saxon. But yeah, it'll be Saxon Old Creek vineyard. But yeah, it's
what do you got planted in those vineyards?
That's all Syrah over there.
All Syrah,
because it's so cool.
So you're going
there? I figured that'd be all northern, like, ripe.
Yeah.
Grenache, all the others, I don't think would get ripe there.
Mm-hmm.
I could do whites over there, and there's a little more to plant, so I might put in some whites out there. But I figured Syrah is on the edge of ripening. You know, last year we picked it November 7th or something. You know, so it barely gets ripe. But it gets ripe, but it keeps all this cool spice and pepper and stuff.
So, 2002, you start this. You didn't make a white wine until 2017.
Yeah. Good memory.
Yeah, I do. I'm good at this. Tie these things all back together.
Nice job.
Believe it or not, it'll make sense. What? So, had you always kept those things planted in the vineyard and just? Were selling off, or did you graft stuff over? What was the...
Yeah, some of both. Like, for the Chardonnay, our last block we had, we grafted it.
Okay.
So we still have the old original rootstock and trunk from the Chardonnay, but up on top is Grenache or Graziano or Mourvedre. And then with the Roussan, we were just selling off all the Roussan. So, I sold it to about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We still sell to Via Creek and Guillaume, Clos Olines, and Canaro. They still get our Roussan, too.
Cool. And you said, like, it's very Burgundian in style. Like, what wines do you drink when you're not drinking? when you're not getting high on your own supply, what do you drink?
Exactly. A lot of Burgundians.
Yeah.
I love white Burgundies and Chablis. It's funny. So it's like totally not what we do here.
Yeah.
So you know, like this is work. And so like people are like, oh, you drink sacks them at home every day? It's like, no, because I drink it. And I'm
spit
like,
that shit out.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, man, I remember that vintage. I wish I would have done this. So it's like, it's always worth it.
Yeah, Don said it. He's like, Don said it's really hard to drink his own
wine.
You can't
just enjoy it.
You're like ah, fuck, that's off. Like it don't matter. Like, you have 100-point wine, you're like, no, you know it's off?
Yeah.
Like, it's a mind fuck.
Yeah, totally. No, so I don't enjoy what I make. You know, I mean, I can appreciate it, but I don't sit back at the dinner table. But my wife's always like, I'll open some Saxon. So, you know, I pop them for her, but I'm always, like, judging it. You know? So, yeah, we drink a lot of, like, higher acid whites at our house. A lot of Burgundy, you know, red Burgundy, too. A lot of Chablis, love bubbles, champagne, or our local stuff, Paleotide.
Yeah.
But I mean, I drink a lot of Rhone stuff.
Yeah.
I love Northern Rhone. You know, the Northern Rhone stuff is definitely different than what we do.
Yeah, who's like? Let's talk about it, because like, who's like, the Northern Rhone's very different, savory.
Yeah, spicy, lighter.
Sometimes stemmy.
Yeah. I like those kinds, like Gonon. Yeah, Gonon, Jamay. Those guys that are like kind of traditional, like I don't like them when they get bready.
Yeah.
I hate Brett, but when they're clean, you know, like the Thierry Allemands But for me, I love Gonon and Jamay. Those are like the two that I wish I could drink the most of. Unfortunately, their prices keep going. So it's like hard to drink them all the time. But yeah, I love that spicy savory, because it's just so different.
Yeah.
But I drink a lot of Southern Rhones too. You know, a lot of Chateauneuf. And Gigondas, and they're pretty different than us, you know.
It's yeah,
like, they're doing the same blends, but I think it's definitely, you know, it's a whole different.
Well, that's the thing about wine, right? Like it's sense of place, right?
Yeah,
terroir. You're notorious for you talk about when you see your last shot enough, but I you're notorious for buying Anne Charlotte's lot every year.
What
do you love about Anne Charlotte's wine? Because they're very different from yours. I mean,
exactly.
They're very different.
We're talking about the lighter, spicier stuff.
Yeah.
So the Font de Loup has that style, you know, where it's definitely lighter and spicier. And it's fun to drink. It's a different wine. So yeah, I always try and buy her stuff. Love her stuff.
Yeah.
And then I drink, Oregon Pinots.
Walter Scott shit is pretty fucking fire right now.
Yeah.
I think the Chardonnays out of Oregon might be
better.
They're coming up quick. But okay, so we, you know, during the warm up or whatever, pre-game or pre-show, I talk about bucket list destinations. I have to assume you visited the Rhone, Northern and Southern. Did they know who you were when you were there?
Only by introduction, yeah.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, the Southern Rhone for sure. Like, yeah. I mean, I visited Anshar a lot and stuff, and so they know who I am. Most of them have come over here.
For hospice.
I think we got Julien Brault coming next week visiting and stuff. So yeah, it's exchange, but yeah, pretty much my guys are the Southern Rhoners.
Yeah.
They're the ones that we connect with. But yeah, when I go to like Burgundy or Taste or whatever, it's like, I tell them Saxon and they're like,
you want to be a rock star, right? Because it's Burgundy, right? But I want to get tricked out, right? Hey, Olivier.
That means nothing. They're like, California? Yeah, I've never heard of it.
No. Paso Robles?
Exactly.
$50 for the tasting.
Yeah.
€50 for the flight. I said it, like, can you call up like a restaurant, like you want to get a restaurant, like, hey, I'm Justin Smith, I'm a winemaker, get a reservation. No.
Nah, it doesn't work for much.
It works here though, right? Like you can be like,
even in Paso.
So we were talking about going to LPC tonight.
Yeah.
You can walk an LPC. Come on, man. You can walk an LPC. Like, you can walk an LPC. Like we have reservations.
I tried to be a dick.
I know.
Someone's about to sit down and they're like, oh, no, sorry, your table's not ready, actually. So, yeah. Call ahead. And then, this is Justin.
Yeah.
Can you get a table, please?
Yeah, no. That's so. I have a buddy who has a restaurant, a couple restaurants in Jersey, and I hadn't seen him in a while, so I stopped on Valentine's Day on the way home, and I just like, and he's always sells this one restaurant with Italian wine, and this rep was there, and he's like, fucking people. Everybody's hitting him up, like, hey, Bobby, like, you should have made a fucking reservation. He's like, shit, I don't even have seats at the bar for people, right? Like, it's so funny how all of us, like, think, oh, I know so-and-so. I'll just roll in. I'm good. I think you should get a t-shirt. First 100 point Robert Farmer wine maker. You should just wear it around, like, walking through Paris. My name is Justin Smith.
No.
Oh.
I know, it's like Paso, it's crazy how crowded it's become in the last
five years.
Right. Like, even like, COVID boomed it. It's like all of a sudden everybody discovered Paso. Because
you guys were open.
Well, they got like all the cities shut down. Because
COVID's
like, oh, we're going to Paso.
No, Paso's just like, it's a very interesting town. Like we don't get into the politics, but people are like, I'm not getting no vaccine. I'm not shutting my business down.
It's like,
and everybody's like, fuck it, I'm leaving LA.
Well, I open the windows. It's pretty much outdoor seating. So, Paso started to boom. So, it's like, you go downtown now. You got to have a reservation.
I know.
Way ahead of time. It's like.
Let's go back to some ruined shit. So, you talked about, it was John Albin who came over here to you guys and said, let's plant this.
Yeah.
When did Bo Castell come in versus John? Because I know John Albin helped start Hospice of Rome with Vicky and first American winery dedicated extremely just to Rome varietals. Provided the fruit. It was Albin fruit in the first sine qua non that, you know, like, so he's iconic for launching this movement.
Yeah. There. No, John was before them.
Yeah.
Not by a lot, but he would.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense, right? Like, I mean, because it's like, okay, so obviously John went over and got clones and brought them back, and they're like, who is this Albin guy, right? And then, you know, Bobby Haas being in for it, and so they figure, you know, we should go see what's going on there. Like, it's very rare when someone from outside the area is going to come in. It's like, and be like, oh, this is it. Like, it's like, he was here, saw it, went over there, and they're like, what is this American doing? And that tracks me. I was trying to figure who was first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, no, John was, and I think, when they were looking around California, I think they hit up John, talked to John, and the local, you know.
And it's all Boats Rises, so he wasn't like, no, don't come here. Bo Castell coming to Paso Robles legitimized Paso Robles.
That was huge.
Come on, let's
huge.
Be.
No, for sure. It was put us on that permanently, you know. Where John was not focused in Paso either. He's a little bit cooler, and he was like, he had a few spots here, and he had kind of spots all over, like he was trying shit out,
incubating.
Bo Castello, they're like, this is the spot right here. That was huge.
That's so fucking cool. So, speaking of that and blending, and let's talk about, like, the bio that was sent talks about Mataro. Let's talk about
Mataro as opposed to
Graciano. Let's break it down. Let's talk about Mataro versus Mourvedre.
So, Mataro and Mourvedre,
yep.
Same thing.
Yep.
This circles back to Tapas Creek, too.
Yeah.
Historically, you know, California has had Mataro planted here for 100 years. There's a lot of old vine.
Up in Contra Costa, especially,
Tons of old vine stuff. Mm-hmm. That was all Mataro. They called it Mataro. It wasn't until Tapas Creek brought in Bo Castell's Mourvedre that they actually had to petition the TTB to be able to call it Mourvedre on a label. Up until that point, you had to call it Mataro.
Wow.
So like all the old ridges and everything, they all
say
it's Mataro.
They still say Mataro.
So when Tapas Creek, Bo Castell, they came in, brought their stuff, they called it Mourvedre. And that's when a whole, you know, it became super cool, French, Chateau Neuf, Bo Castell, we all started calling it Mourvedre.
Okay.
That was the cool thing. So it definitely switched. Everybody called it Mataro. Totally was like, that's what your grandfather calls it.
That's what your Spanish grandfather called it.
Six or 7 years ago, I'm like, you know what? I mean, we're growing Mataro clone four mm-hmm. here. We planted before Tobias Creek brought their stuff in. So mm-hmm. RCEP is the old Mataro clones. So I'm like, you know what? I'd rather pay homage to those old dudes that brought in. They've been doing mm-hmm. it here forever. So we changed it back to Mataro. Mm-hmm. But same thing. Mourvedre in France, Mataro, California, Monastrell in Spain.
Yeah, Monastrell.
And then there's the Graziano Monastrell thing.
Yes.
So
yes,
you might have heard of that too. So
that's the story we're like.
So that was, we got a new clone of Mourvedre from Spain. Nurseries brought it in, Monastrell. So we planted that, grafted over one of our blocks. And it came out and it was like, this looks nothing like all.
Yeah, Donson, you looked at the leaf. You're like, this. It was the leaf. You're like, this doesn't look like.
Does not look like all the Mourvedres and Mataros that were growing here. And the nursery's like, no, it is. It totally is.
It's your baby, Mr.
Yeah,
Smith.
The clusters were pretty
black.
Close, but totally.
Yeah.
This
is your child, Mr. Smith.
the fruit was like super black, and Mataro's pretty light.
Yeah.
So like even the fruit was different, high acid, low acid, but it's like. Everyone's like, oh, it's just a cool clone of Mourvedre. It's like, it's darker and more acid. And I was like, talking back to the nursery, you sure you DNA'd this? Oh, yeah, we DNA'd it. And so, like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't think it is, but whatever. We really love it. So to me, I don't care what it is.
Right.
It
doesn't taste good.
Yeah,
right.
The grape's growing. I love the grape. Right. But, at some point, I'm reading... just reading the catalog of clones.
Yeah, just light reading
the description of Graziano, looking at the pictures and going, this is totally what we have out there. So I take a clipping and I send it to Davis. I'm like, what's the DNA on this? And they're like, that's Graziano. And this was like 10 years that the nursery had been selling this shit. And at that point, they're like, oh, this is the best Mourvedre clone we got. Everybody's planting it instead of Mourvedre. They're all planting Graziano because they're like, oh, it's darker.
The
and
color.
It's
yeah,
acid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, and then so I'm like, hey, nursery, this is actually Graziano. And they're like, what? Like, DNA. Davis.
You should
irrefutable.
You should
check this out.
You should have totally walked over there and did like the Goodwill hunting. Like, you'd be like, do you like Graziano? No, we only have that one.
Yeah.
Well, it's Graziano. How do you like them apples?
It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
It was because, I was like, are you sure? They're like, let me go check our field. No, it's totally. And I was like, all right, here's the DNA. Yeah. And at that point, they're like, fuck, we got a problem.
Houston, we have a problem.
So a lot of people that just liked it as a fruit just changed the label. But a lot of people that wanted to be like, oh, this is our Mourvedre program. They had to pull it out or graft it.
I don't know why you would pull it out. Donnie did that. One of his Maturans was like Graziano based, and it's like when you get a Rioja, that's Grenache and Graziano. That's a motherfucker. It's like some other. Like
it's a great variety. Yeah.
It's a great variety, and I think it does very well here. Yeah. It's found. It's like. One of those things, it's like found its home here, does something special.
Yeah, sneak in the back door.
Yeah,
I'm all Mourvedre.
Yeah.
But you ain't know Mourvedre. Because it was available to us as Graziano. The nursery had it in the catalog. You could have planted it.
Wow.
I think even Sinequinol and Banford planted Graziano as Graziano, not, thinking it was Monastrell. So it was around, you could plant it, but it was like, it wasn't until it got out there everywhere that it was like...
Freaking hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny.
And so, let's talk about the Cav. How did this,
come about?
Yeah, man.
Well, I don't know if you've known this, but Paso Robles gets hot.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot in air conditioning bills. My old spot, I was, AC's going 24/7 to keep that building 60 degrees. And it's like, it just made sense to go somewhere where it's cool, So we don't even have ACs in here. It's
no, like, and listen, natural. The white and the red are both at cellar, like when you talk cellar temperature, like it's mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
it's like 59.
So it stays like, high 50s all year round, could be 110 out here and mm-hmm. you walk in there and it's 60 degrees. So, that was a big thing. And things, I think, age a lot better when they don't have those ACs blowing on them 24/7.
Sure.
You know, like my wines up there would dry out pretty quick just from that air blowing constantly across the barrel. So like I had to bottle them really quick. They would, the alcohols would go way up because they're drying out the, they're, you know, pulling out moisture. But the alcohol is not getting pulled out. So alcohol's going out. They're aging really fast with that AC. Where in the cave, it's, you know, completely still. And the high humidity, the alcohol's actually come down a little bit, which is a nice bonus, you know. So you're not topping up as much, and your alcohol is going down or staying stable. No ACs. So, yeah, we've got, you know, that solar array that you pass on your way in provides 100% for everything, the whole winery, for the vineyard, everything. So we're totally 100% solar with not a big, huge array, you know, because there's no chilling going on, which is the big thing. Even the fermenters don't get too hot. You know, you got, they got the glycol jackets that we, I put in a $250,000 glycol system out there. Being like, all right, I'm going to chill these tanks. They get too hot, and I haven't turned it on. They don't get too hot because even the whole
Justin,
you know,
had just 250k
cool
to throw on, so you don't even
well,
use that.
Well,
that's
like I'm gonna do it right, you know.
No,
well,
I get it.
Do it right,
you
know? But like, yeah, that was not money well spent.
And so you
so yeah, we built it. 2015 was the first vintage we did down here. So yeah, 2000 up till then we're making wine up top. But yeah, 15 on down here, nice big space, so we got plenty of room to spread out.
And yeah, and like you don't have far to truck these grapes.
No,
in.
Grapes are right there, coming dropped off right there. We get to process inside, which is another bonus. Hotter than fuck out there.
Yep,
nice in the caves. We're processing in there.
Oh, that's got to be great because I know people are putting dry ice on it, trying to keep. Grapes.
Yeah, yeah, you're out and getting stung by yellow jackets. Yeah. You got heat coming in, so yeah. Super, super chill. We do all our processing in there. It's a dream. Yeah, it's really allowed us to go take it up another notch for sure.
Yeah.
And now we've kind of like settled into our estate producing what we need in here and kind of have our happy amount that we're producing quantity wise and settled in and dialing it in, you know, but at this point it's fine tuning as opposed to bigger shifts.
And so, you know, you're doing great things, and we talked about Southern Rhone, Chenef, those are your peeps. When did you meet Philippe Combi?
It was, you know, definitely the Hospice de Rhone connection, with Vicky Carroll, and then, yeah, Sasha Verhage. He was our trifecta in the partnership, so he kind of introduced us, and we knew Philippe wanted to do a project in the area, so we were all like, hey, hope he picks me. So yeah, we were stoked when he approached us and he's like, I want to do a project, but a little twist, I want to do it with some Zen. And I know you guys aren't doing a lot of Zen, but I know you're doing like some Paderewski and some stuff, but he's like, I want to do what I do at Chateau Neuf and Grenache, but Zen here in California. I'm like, all right, let's give it a go. So yeah, it was super cool. Such a nice guy and such a talent. You know, his palate was like nothing I've ever seen. Where like he would just like, we would throw out like 40 different samples. You know? Say like, you know, 5 Zins and 4 Grenaches and like just throw them all out in flights for him, and he'd just like taste through everyone, you know, write a little note kind of a thing. And then he would like be like, okay, I want 40% of this, 22% of this, 12% of this, and put it together, and he wouldn't even need to taste it. He'd be like,
that's some baller shit.
Yeah. He, you know, mic drop. And we taste it, we're like, what the fuck? You know, it's like, how did he do that? And, you know, it's like, we're all trying to match him, you know, like, at the same time, we're like, oh, I'm going to do it like this. And, like, his every time, hands down, was, like, way better than anything we were throwing together.
Did you
use... And we would, like, redo it, like, oh, man, but it was always first try.
And he that's what I heard. Like, he's, like, first try.
Always first try. And, like, yeah. And, like, one of the, like, things that like totally changed my thinking about wine. I'm like, you know, like how do you do this?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's just totally simple for me. And he says, I mean, his English is really broken.
Yeah.
You know, Spanish, French, then English. But he's like, it's as simple as making a sandwich. He's like, when I taste through, I'm like, this is the bread. This is the meat, you know. This is the mustard. I just need a little bit of this, you know. And this is like the pickle. I need a little bit of this. But he's like, you taste through and like, you taste five different breads, you're not going to be like, I need some of this bread and this bread. He's like, this is the bread.
That's the bread.
This is the bread, and that's the good chunk, and then the next chunk is the meat, and that's the next. So it's like, he could figure that shit out just, but, you know, like, it's easy. You make a sandwich without thinking about it, you know? It's like, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and you got your favorite sandwich. Yeah, but, like, yeah, he could taste the wine and know, like, okay, that's the wine I need 40% of, you know? And then, like, but it's going to need this meat. That's going to be this much. And then this spicy thing here, or like, he's like, for him, it's not mustard, it's like butter, you know? It's like ham, cheese, and butter, you know? He's like, this wine is butter, and this wine is butter. He's like, you're not going to put the butter on top of the butter. He's like, you just need a little bit of butter. Like, all right. You know, that totally makes sense. You know, I'd explain it like that, as opposed to being like, oh, it needs, you know, 2% of this. Right, it's like, no, he tastes it, and it's like...
Right, because, like, you know, how much bread is on a sandwich?
Yeah, exactly.
How much meat is on a sandwich? That's fucking brilliant. And the project downstream, what would tell people about what the project was?
Yeah, so it was cool. It was just a few hundred cases. So, like I said, you would come here.
See, it was expensive. I got to 2016. I was making money back then.
Yeah.
I still have my Magnum of the 2016.
It was crazy expensive. But yeah, so
it was five bottles. It was $1,000 for that shit, y'all. Just when your boy was not podcasting and had a job, was making money. I was so psyched when I was like, got the letter. I was like, I'm buying it.
Nice, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course, and it was for a good cause. So yeah, tell me about the downstream.
So yeah, so you know, I took all my proceeds and they would go all back into charity contributions. So yeah, I did it with all 100% going back in to community somehow. But yeah, he would come out here, make that blend, and we would bottle it up, and Sasha did all the logistics and all the packaging and everything, and Sasha handled the shipping and stuff. So he'd blend it, and, you know, I'd make it be Saxum stuff, Saxum wine.
Right.
Really, the only thing that we were getting that we weren't getting before was Old Vine Doozy, and he didn't even always pick that. You know, sometimes he would pick that, sometimes he wouldn't. But so it'd be, you know, the different. We were getting Four Hearts in, we were getting, got that Doozy, we were getting Paderewski's in, and Zen from G2, and yeah, we would just throw
you got Zen
all
in G2?
These, yeah.
Shit.
We'd just throw them all out in front of him, and he'd make that blend, and he'd make the blend like about this time of the year, when everything was fresh, and then he'd come back like later on, check on it, make sure after we blended it that everything was good. And so he'd come by twice a year, and that was it. Yeah.
Did you use his yeast? Is it not, or did you use your, what was
everything
it?
Was us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in the beginning, I'm like, I'm gonna like learn some secrets.
Right.
But he was pretty much just make it how you make it.
That's cool.
And he's like, whatever. He's like, ferment it and press it off and feed the pumice to your cows. That was like his winemaking instructions. And I was like, man, I was hoping for some kind
I was like, come on, man.
You know, some trade secrets. You got to do this. Or, you know, I was like, nah, no secrets. Just super simple. And yeah.
You see, wanted to make a Zinfandel.
Yeah.
And you were the guy.
So, yeah, I was super honored that he, like, chose us to go that route. And it was cool while it lasted.
Yeah. Gone too early. But yeah. So, how many kids do you have? Because you mentioned you're having babies with Heather.
So I got three.
Way back when, yeah, three.
Yeah, I got three kids. Oldest, Colin, is my assistant winemaker here. He took over Donnie Burns' role. And then Olivia is hopefully going to be working back for us. Right now she's traveling in Europe, and she before that she was working at Booker. She graduated from Lewis and Clark up in Oregon.
I know,
So she's
got a good liberal arts education.
Yeah, exactly.
Way to go, Dad.
But I think she wants to work around some other wineries first to kind of get a feel of it before she comes to work for us And then I've got an eighth grader, Elon, so she's got a little ways to go still.
And Colin made some, he's made some wine of his own. Like I read somewhere he made a Gewürztraminer.
Yeah. who was it? Someone wrote about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I don't know.
That was like, from Stolo. Stolo's got a little Gewürztraminer over there. So yeah, that was when he was fooling around. I think he actually made that. And then he went and worked at Beaufrère.
He worked at Beaufrère. Oh.
Yeah. And then he came down here, and his girlfriend was going to school at Santa Cruz, so he worked at this winery called Sturm up in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. did that for a few years, and then she got her degree, and they moved back here, and they're living on the V2 ranch. There's an old cabin up there, and they're living there, and Ray's teaching at our kid's school, which is awesome, and Colin's making wine here. And
what's it like working with your son?
It's cool.
Is it cool?
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah.
Does he push back? I
try and be, you know, like, I was hard working with my dad.
Yeah, because I'm saying you worked with your dad.
I worked with my dad. And
it was a different generation.
It wasn't super easy. It wasn't super easy. You know, it was, when I started the winery, it was like, I'm starting the winery by myself.
Right.
I'll work with you in the vineyard, but this is going to be my decision. So, yeah. So, I'm very mindful of, you know, that dynamic. Trying to give him lots of room to breathe and find his own way and figure things out, but you know, and letting him have the rein on some stuff and ferment wise, be like, all right, this is yours. Do whatever you want. You know, go have fun with it. And he's having fun with it, but at the same time, he's aware of like the legacy of Saxum and like what that means, and like not trying to like totally reinvent the wheel, but like, you know, more fine-tune it, so it's cool. So yeah, hopefully at some point I can spend a little more time.
Yeah.
Not doing whatever.
All right, man, a couple more questions and I'm going to let you go. Thank you for this. Right now we're going to play a little game
called
Slap, Lick, Fondle. Yeah, my show is perverse.
Slap,
lick, fondle. I'm going to give you three grapes. Tell me which one you're going to slap, which one you're going to lick, which one you're going to fondle. And I'm just going to just go there because you are a Rhone Rata, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvedre. Who are you slapping?
Well, Mourvedre. You can slap Mourvedre around. Mortaro. We found that out in the heat, you know, it's freaking, it gets slapped upside the head with these heats and it's like, what? Is it good hot?
Like, it's like, that all you got?
Yeah, yeah. Totally. So yeah, Mataro can take a slapping and it's totally cool with it. And yeah, Grenache, even though it seems like it's, the like, can take it, it needs to be fondled. It needs to be caressed. It's like the most temperamental, that it's easy to make bad Grenache. It's easy to grow a lot of Grenache, and that's why like Central Valley is full of Grenache, and you can 20 tons an acre, and it makes sugar and makes alcohol, and that's super easy. But to make good Grenache really is tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely requires the most kind of
burp. Yeah.
And then Syrah's like it's the most dynamic, where like it shows so differently at different spots. You know, a cool, like we're talking about those northern Rhones that are just light and spicy, mm-hmm. and then, you know, go to like some big Aussie that's, you know, in your face and rich, that's still super good too. It's like the way it's dynamic.
Yeah,
that's the lick.
I love it. That's a very good answer, Justin Smith. All right, last question. What are you most excited about for the future? Because now you got the Cobb, you're working with your son, your daughter's out exploring the world of wine, hoping to come back. Like, what are you most excited about?
Yeah, definitely the next generation coming in.
Yeah.
With that, too, the next generation of vineyards. So, you know, we started getting fruit off of our Old Creek, but our newest planting up on York Mountain. is something super cool. We bought a big spread up there, but there's only about 15 acres plantable because it's so steep. But we planted this awesome stuff. But it's so different that it's, instead of this shale calcareous stuff that has clay, up there it's sandstone. So it's decomposed sandstone, which is much more like decomposed granite, so it makes a more lighter, kind of spicier, ethereal wine. I don't know if you've had Donnie's Plum Orchard.
I've had the Plum Orchard.
Or Ledge's Adams Ranch. You know, they're definitely different expressions of Grenache and Syrah. And those are both coming from the same sandstone formation.
Okay.
So something super fun and different. I'm really excited to start getting fruit off that, but it's, you know, 3-4 years
Fucking Justin Smith. Thank you, man. Sorry, Peck and Burl. I didn't even get to Peck and Burl. Those fucking kids. But we've denied. We'll get you guys on it. But anyway, that's another group you've just spawned out.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's fucking, I mean, it's sick. Not that... You know, get on the list. You're going to be waiting a while, but tell people how they can be a part of what you're doing here at Saxon Vineyards.
At SaxonVineyards.com, you can sign up and get your name on the list. And it's a few years' wait, but when we have some wine available, we'll let you know.
Awesome. And for all listeners out there, make sure you check out the show notes. I'll put the wines we drank. I'll put their website. I'll put their Instagram. This is a super special one for me because the wines I like, and just like, you know, I love the humility, man. The humility.
Thanks, dude. Yeah. No, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, for
I remember
sure.
like when you're first tagging me on your Insta.
Yeah.
You know, and like it's like the black wine guy, and I had to be like, hey Don. Is this like a guy that likes black wine?
Know,
or is he like a black guy that likes wine?
MCA was like, he's like, dude, man, like, I don't know if I can like black wine. I feel like, I'm like, that's the whole point of it. Like, relax, dude. I'm blackish. No, super cool. And that was always fun. Like, even like, it's not big now, but like when I had like 1,000 people, like you were following me, Jeb was following me, Donnie was following me. Like, I was just happy to be like, I like these wines. And you guys like, hey, who's it? You know, same thing with the crew. Like, they're like, this guy drinks the type of shit we drink. And that was what it was and always will be for me, is getting together with people I think are cool, chill. This is like the first like music backed episode, because we had like this fucking, you know, Donnie. I mean, we're down here and Justin's like, you know, it's just, I'm like, yeah, we can have some music in the background. Fuck it. So deal with it. So yeah,
I couldn't hear anything for that whole episode because of the damn music.
I know somebody's gonna be like that. Somebody's like, "Yeah, why aren't you hanging me?" Like, we're way close to the microphone. That was a little ambiance for you. That's a little bit of Graciano for you. Just a little. So yeah. So cheers to the Mavericks, the Deep Thinkers, all your wine drinkers. MJ, peace.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something. You had some fun while you were here. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to. And if you want to be an insider and get special content, make sure you go over to blackwineguy.com and get on our email list.